DMT World presents The Rambling Rabbit, and I am its host, Happy KB. Welcome to The Rambling Rabbit. I have a special guest today that we have Aminaro from our community. Just a little bit about him. He has been with us since September 3rd, 2019. So he's been with us on the site for the long haul, pretty much. So it's all you. If you want to tell us, just give us a little rundown about who you are and how you found us, and we'll go from there. So Aminaro, it is your turn to talk to us and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot for inviting me on to have a discussion. I've been looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
So I kind of found the site during my first ceremonial sitting with plant medicines in Sonora, Mexico. I'd gone down, I'd been experiencing psychedelics since I was 14, but struggled with my own addiction issues with opioids. And so I was stable for about 7 years, but I was on Suboxone maintenance, which is one of the worst things I think we have in this country, because, I mean, it's good if it's used in an acute short term,
right?
But the whole idea of maintenance is, it keeps people much sicker than they even know. Kept me sicker than I know until I came off of it,
Right.
And so I actually had a really bad accident in 2018. And because of the Suboxone, I had no ability for pain control. So they had to put me in a coma for 5 days just to try and get the Suboxone out enough so that Dilaudid would work, like IV drip, and that didn't even work. It wouldn't even keep me out of withdrawal.
Oh my gosh.
So it was like pretty coming off of, or coming through that injury and doing the physical healing was very painful. And so I ended up, when I left the hospital, I just went back. I stopped the Dilaudid they gave me, because then the take-home pills, they don't do anything.
Right.
So I just went back on Suboxone. And, it's interesting to me that they use Suboxone for chronic pain use now, because it does nothing for pain. It really doesn't. And all it does is it numbs the emotional self. And it's like you feel stable if you've been addicted to opioids. So Suboxone can make you feel okay.
Right. That's what I was going to say. I know a lot of people who are on Suboxone because they were getting off of opium. And that's what they substituted over to help with the withdrawal, I guess. I don't know a lot about Suboxone and actually how it works. So that's kind of interesting that you were on that for pain management.
Yeah, I was actually on it for opioid addiction, like maintenance.
Oh, gotcha. And they had to take you off of that to use the other stuff for the pain maintenance. Is that what you said?
Yeah, because when you have Suboxone, like on the way, they kept giving me shot after shot, and my parents were actually there begging them to give me more medicine. They're like, what we gave them would kill anybody else. We can't give them any. And so they had to put me in a coma. It was really bad. It was a bad accident. I had spinal cord broken in 7 vertebrae and, shattered my face. Actually, I had double vision in my eye when it finally opened.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And it was in the middle of grad school. It was in the middle of my first year. And so as I was healing from my physical injuries, I didn't really notice my cognitive problems, because I did have a traumatic brain injury from it. I cracked my skull and there was bleeding on the brain. So when I did go back to school the following fall, the first time I tried to actually use cognitive capacities, I noticed that I was not right, to say the least. It was like there would be moments where I would literally almost time travel. I'd forget like the last year of my life, forget the accident happens, and not know where I was, what was happening. And it would come for like fleeting moments. It'd last for a minute or two, but it would be terrifying.
Right.
What is going on? And then all these flood of memories would come back, and I'm like, man. So I was getting, you know, I had to go to a neurologist for that. They had no answers. And so after the first year back in school, which brings me to the summer of 2019, I had a lot of really good professors who let me focus all of my work into psychedelic medicines because I believe in them. I believed in them before I went and sat with the master plant teachers.
Right.
Because of my addiction, once I got off the hard drugs and switched to Suboxone maintenance, I did LSD about a year later after going through and not smoking marijuana, drinking or anything, you know, just staying on the Suboxone. And I was ready to trip again. And I did LSD. And it was like, you know, I always knew they were doing a lot for me with spiritual growth, thought progression, things of that nature. But all of a sudden, I saw how healing they were because the experience wasn't a challenging one necessarily. But it did make me just sit and look at my entire life of addiction and feel every bit of it, you know. And so that really solidified it. I was like, wow, this is really a medicine. You know what I mean? And that was back in like 2015. And so when I started going to school to become a therapist, I focused my studies into psychedelic medicines and healing modalities. All from the past, you know, the 50s and all the data that's out there. And with no real indication or knowing ability that I would be able to work with ketamine someday and eventually psilocybin and other things. So it was kind of it was amazing to bring those things together. So in August, July of 2019, I had been doing a lot of research and I had a professor who introduced me to Iboga through literature and ayahuasca, which I had known about, but I started learning a lot more by studying it. And I realized one thing I was very upset about with my accident was I didn't have a near-death experience. And I do believe that's kind of because of all the medicines that were in my system.
I bet you're right.
I didn't even dream then. You know, I had nothing going on in my life. Not nothing in my life, but in my mind. So I was like, you know what? I want to get off all these things. And Ibogaine is supposed to be able to help. I did the research and it looked very promising. So I went and found a place in Mexico called Rite of Passage, and it was the best thing I've ever done for myself. It's very interesting. It's like my life split at that point, and it changed every part of who I am. Not changed it, but made me align with who I have always been.
Sure.
And was always disconnected from my wounds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was the beginning of it, I'll say, you know, because it's a process. And that first year was rough. It was like, I got a lot of good relief from what I went through. And also a lot of problems arose during it. I had a Bowner's recluse bite me. I had bad infection. When I came home, I had to go daily for IV antibiotics. To like 7 different kinds. They almost took my leg, actually.
Oh my.
But it was crazy because it was like physically I was in a ton of pain. I still wasn't sleeping. I've been a bad insomniac. And I was kind of like in a state of both having like my third eye open so much that like I would be experiencing more of the spirit realm here. But then also there was the delineation of that and what I would call hallucinations when I started seeing shadow people that were more just like from not sleeping, you know?
Yeah.
and I do feel like there's a difference. For me, the term hallucination is very oppressive and derogatory. If I ever use it, it's with intention, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So when I was in Mexico that first time, I was just sitting there preparing and doing research and found DMT World and signed up kind of right around that time just to have some connections to talking to other people who experience these things. And that was kind of perfect because it was a really good, it was a good website for me because I disconnected from everything else. And I had been for a long time.
Right.
From the internet. I think Facebook went away from me in 2014. Oh, and somebody,
you are so smart. That's probably good. That's probably the best thing that ever can happen to you.
Definitely, right? What's funny is too, like, I didn't even make my Facebook account. Somebody made it for me and was like, here, you need to be on here. I was like, what? What is this? but I used it for a few years, you know. But I don't enjoy that connection space. I think that's, I do now to a certain point, like for things of this nature and for meeting, working with people like through Zoom that I can connect to in other parts of the world.
Right. Absolutely. Using it as a tool, a mechanism of the tool to help us further us in what we're doing. Yes. To use it as a social, just to is, yeah. I like utilizing the social platforms as well as for the tool based purposes, but that's about all I like it for.
Yeah.
I would rather be able to reach out and touch people and talk to them and like have more communication based that way than what social media does. Okay. Go on. Keep going.
So I sat with the first time I went down there, it was very, very rough. Coming off the box and was unbelievably painful. I've come off of it before.
Right.
Interestingly enough, I'm now, so there's a class action lawsuit against Suboxone, and there's also a class action lawsuit against Camp Lejeune. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I do. I know a little bit about Camp Lejeune.
Yep. So I was in utero in Camp Lejeune. I was born in Connecticut. That's my home state. But then I spent my first 2 years of life back in Camp Lejeune. I have neurological disorders because of it. My parents both have cancer. And I get calls almost daily by them trying to get me to join the lawsuit. And then they say they'll take me. And then they're like, oh, nope, your neurological order doesn't count.
Doesn't allow it, yeah.
I'm like, and it honestly, it was very, it's very wounding every time they do that because it's like, to me, you know, those are two big macro level pieces that greatly affect my life.
Exactly, because, I agree, yeah.
And so oddly enough, 2 days ago, we got an update saying that they updated the neurological disorders that are applicable, and I believe I'm on there now.
Oh.
And I got, so a couple of years ago during the class action lawsuit for Suboxone, when it came to me, I was still too traumatized. I hadn't done any real healing yet. This was back in maybe 2015, I think, something like that. And I didn't sign a waiver declaring myself out of the lawsuit, but it was finalized.
Right.
And I got a letter the same day that my dad got that email from the Suboxone lawsuit saying there's another one and I'm applicable for it. It's like, I don't really care about the money. I want to be able to talk about it. I want to like have a voice when it comes to the idea that, look, you know, like my father was a Marine. All those people stationed there were Marines. Yep. They're working for the Army, and the Army and our government knew since 1959 till 1984 when they finally told us that the water was poisonous.
Right.
So they were knowingly poisoning their own soldiers and families, which speaks to like the American culture so much to me.
Yep.
And then because of those neurological disorders, my body was kind of set and ready to become addicted to opioids. Like, honestly, not that I blame it like that, but I know, like, at 5 years old, having night terrors, turning into insomnia, never sleeping or being comfortable in my body for my entire life.
Yep.
Until I found painkillers, it was almost like natural. It was like, I don't understand why everybody doesn't take these, like, but because nobody not everybody feels the same way. I didn't get that back then.
Yeah, right. You're looking from your point of view and not looking from why the other point of view. That makes
sense. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And now, like, I'm so grateful. You know, like, I have a lot of gratitude for my wounding today. I do. Mm-hmm. I do believe that we are the medicine. You are the medicine, right? And it's like your medicine is your pain. It's the pain that if you've done work with self, it's not like we get rid of our pain, but we could transmute it. And then we can use it for like post-traumatic growth. And that post-traumatic growth tends to affect other people, you know, right, in a positive way. And so it's like, I have so much gratitude for every one of my wounds, which is hard to say. It's not hard to say with logic. I hold it with logic. It's hard to feel, but I do feel it at times. And when I do, it's one of the most beautiful moments. Usually that comes in a very deep dive journey, but I have been able to bring that out with me finally, to the extent where sometimes when I'm sharing, like I'm sharing with you right now, I'll start crying because I actually feel it. I actually feel the love for my wounds. I'm like so grateful for it, you know.
Right. Well, because it's made us up to be who we are at this point in time. We wouldn't be who we are now and grateful or humbled or whatever we feel at this moment of our right now if we didn't have those wounds.
Absolutely.
So no matter how we live our life, no matter how we walk our life, we will always have wounds. These wounds, these things that have been inflicted upon us in our past, we just have to learn how to be the medicine, just like you said, because it is. We're the medicine, and these substances only help us help our medicine be better, help healing, help the process, help us gain understanding of why and who and what we are at this point in time. Totally agree.
Yeah, they connect us to that inner healing intelligence we all have, that divinity within us. Connection, right, to force, to Gaia, you know, it's a beautiful thing. And it's like, for me, you know, I like to, you know, for individuals, when I work with in therapy, it's all about narratives. You know, we write our own narratives, we do.
Exactly.
And we've done that collectively and just bought into it for so long. But I almost feel like it was necessary. You know, it's like, because I do believe in a sense we have evolved from Gaia. And like, if you look at like evolution and how, like what we would have had to go through as conscious beings, being in a reptilian brain or being, you know, like.
Right.
And I say that because it's like I've had experiences like with DMT where it's like I feel as though I completely am deconstructed back into source, and then I go through the evolutionary process of evolving through these different organisms. Of,
right.
and like specifically the reptilian mind, because like I've been stuck in this reptilian place, and it's not unpleasant. It's very strange. It's kind of like, I mean, it is unpleasant, but it feels like to me, it's like being a conduit for like the pain of the collective and what we've had to go through, because our first wound is being born.
Right.
And it really is. It's almost like, I do believe the point of life or the reason for life is to experience it, but to experience it is to heal, because we're experiencing wounding all the time.
Yes.
Which is why wounding is the biggest part of the healing process too, right? Like,
right,
we wouldn't need to heal if it wasn't for wounds. So it's kind of a interesting thing here in this duality world we live in, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we're in Mexico and you are being facilitated with this substance that you went to go seek out because you wanted to get clean. Where did we go from there?
So Mexico, that was a long experience. So I did Cambo twice in preparation.
Okay.
You only need to do it once, but and you do it the first morning you're there. The first morning I was there, I was so sick. And like, it's unbelievable. Suboxone, very strong medicine. I was on 16 milligrams a day for 7 years, right?
Whoa.
I'm going to taper before I go, because I was on other meds too. So like, I took away every other med but Suboxone, which all have withdrawal effects. No withdrawals present. Okay. So then I just started tapering the Suboxone, and I did like a schedule. And I pushed that schedule so fast, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait a second, like, I'm taking from like 10 days from when I started, I went from 16 milligrams to 1 milligram a day without feeling withdrawal at all. Not a single bit. And then I started skipping days, didn't get withdrawal. Then I went to 0.5 milligram every other day. That's when I started to feel it a little bit. Right. So 3 days before I left, I took my last dose. You don't really feel the full withdrawal of Suboxone. You think you do, but until about 4 days is when it starts.
Right.
And so I got there at night, passed out fine. I was like, man, I might get through this. I woke up in the morning to do Cambo. And you have to drink 3 liters of water first, you know, have an empty stomach, no meds, all that stuff. So I was in withdrawal. And I drank all the water, and I was getting ready to get the medicine. I had to take one more sip. I took that last sip, and everything came out. And for the next 7 days, I couldn't hold anything down, so I couldn't even do Cambo because I couldn't drink water. I was puking nonstop, and they were giving me doses of morphine that are very high and wouldn't even touch the withdrawal. It was insane. Luckily, I got to the Cambo. That first Cambo session went really well. Mm-hmm. I was able to cut my morphine dose in half, which was significant, without withdrawal. It was like I stabilized with it at half of the dose. But then again, he couldn't move me down at all. And so he made me do it again a week later. He didn't make me. He asked me, you know.
Right. He advised.
That was hell. It was literally a 3-hour Cambo experience. I don't know. Have you ever tried Cambo?
I have not had the experience yet, no.
Yes. I love it now. For doing it for withdrawal, it was very painful. Terrifying, actually.
You're not the only person I've heard who says that. They always tell me, you know, they did it when they were withdrawing. And my experience would be different because I'm not sitting in the middle of an addiction at this point in time. So, hopefully one of these days I get to experience the Cambo because I'm very eager.
Well, I will be a Cambo practitioner soon.
That's fantastic. I love knowing that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. And it's interesting because I did it the last time I did it was the first time not in withdrawal.
Yeah.
And he started the ceremony the same way he always does because I've done it with the same two people. It was a husband and wife. And they started stroking the wooden frog. Mm-hmm. Before they even burnt my skin to then apply the medicine, I started purging fully. It was like my body knew what was coming. And it was so grateful for it. And I was just, it was beautiful. And when it was done, I was like, oh my God, this need in my regimen. Like, honestly, because I think it can cut down the need for, you know, I like to do psychedelics, but I do like to do them with intention. And sometimes because of my emotional wounding, I need them more than I want to need them. You know what I mean?
Yes. I understand completely.
Yeah, and so I think adding Cambo to like once a month will significantly reduce the need. And because I do like to be able to experience the medicines when I'm in a good place and I'm doing it more for growth and for more insight into beliefs, you know?
Yes.
It is different when I need it for healing, and that's something I struggle with because I've discovered a lot of things about self through them, you know?
Exactly.
Like ketamine showed, like I was trying to figure out for a while why ketamine was working so well for me, and because I have terrifying experiences on it. Not always, but a lot of the times. And I realized like what ketamine does is it gives me the chaos that I'll seek to create if I don't have it there. Cause that's been like my life, you know?
Right.
So for me, I have this idea of homeostasis. people hear that and think that's like a like homeostasis. It's a balanced, harmonized form. Mm-hmm. But it's not. It's like we all have our own homeostatic patterns that are conditioned. And it's like by life and wounding. And so part of my homeostasis is chaos on like twice a month basis. And like, if I don't get that from the medicine, I'll unconsciously create it almost. And that kind of bothers me to an extent because it's like, how can I, you know, it's so hard to, I can work really well with other people, but like with self, it's so different. You know what I mean?
Yes. The accountability is different when you're working with self. When you're working with other people, it's a kind of a, you hold each other at accountability states, but when you got to, when you're doing it for yourself, it's different. I completely understand the chaos too, and utilizing psychedelics to for the chaos, so you don't create the chaos outside of the that use. I get that because I'm that, I'm of that nature as well.
Glad to hear you can resonate over that.
Oh, totally, totally. So okay, so we're in Mexico. I want to keep going on this journey. I want to hear more about what we did after Mexico. Like, how did we get to where we're at now? Because you are now actually doing therapy work with people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I came back from Mexico, you know, I was there for a month, and I was sick for a little while, but then I went and finished grad school as my last year. And, you know, when I went into be a therapist, I wanted to work with substance use disorders because that's my biggest struggle. And I've been in and out of treatment. I know how terrible treatment is. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be able to provide better services. And the deeper, you know, right when I started school, because, you know, I was older. I never went to college after high school. You know, I partied until long, you know, I turned 30 in rehab. So.
Right.
So when I went back, it was like starting at the beginning, exactly. And why was I saying that? What was the question? I'm sorry.
It's fine. We're talking about therapy. You just got out of Mexico and you got back in, you were going into school for therapy. You didn't go to high school. I mean, you went after high school, you kind of waited and then you went to school a little bit later on. So you were a little bit older.
Yep. So I was looking into to treat substance use disorders, but very quickly within school, I realized that what I was wanting to treat was trauma, because that's what I see everything as, you know, and I really do. And that's the lens I work through, and it works very well with people. You know, the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual that lists all the disorders that we have in the U.S. that are just concepts of the mind, really.
Right. Just put labels on them. Yes,
absolutely. And the problem is clients come in over identifying with them completely.
Yes. So,
like, you're not that, you're, that's just like your wounding and your trauma response being reinforced into those patterns. That's how I see it, you know? So I started focusing on trauma, and in my studies using psychedelic medicines to heal traumas or to, you know, go through a healing process. And, and so, after all my internships in grad school were at substance use disorder treatment centers, and I did very well working with those clients. I did enjoy it quite a bit, the client interaction, you know?
Yeah.
What I didn't enjoy was that the idea of the medicines we use here, we keep people sick, and the ones that work, we can't even talk about. And not only can we not talk about them with clients, but I couldn't even be open with the clinical staff about my life. It was like I had to have that fractured identity to show up and not be authentic. And I started to realize when that was occurring, that part alone, not being able to be authentic, makes me want to use. It's like, you know, when you have these fractured identities, which we all have, right? It's like, it's so hard to show up and be genuine that for somebody like me, I needed substances to like hide myself and act okay. And so I struggled a lot with that. And COVID hit, I got a job there, ended up leaving because COVID was too much. And took a break. I went back and did more plant medicines. I mean, during that year time from that first sitting, I sat with Mother Aya 8 times, Ibogaine twice, Yopo 3 times, Huachuma.
So you're just kind of taking a tour through all the medicine, plant medicines.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, and it was necessary too. It was like, man, because like after, you know, almost 40 years of conditioning the mind, right? Mm-hmm. It's like one shutdown of that, and that it gives you a short window of opportunity for change. It really does. And without knowing anything about have integration work and having a how to hold awareness, it's fleeting. It really is. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up leaving substance abuse treatment and kind of thought about moving to North Carolina. I went up there for about 4 months. This was still COVID time. And it was a lot different up in North Carolina to find work. And so I just decided to go somewhere else on the East Coast that was a little easier.
Yeah.
And then, fortunately, I was like struggling. I was in a bad place. My last sitting with Mother Aya left me very wounded. Very interesting. I'm writing about the whole experience because it's like all 8 sittings were the same message delivered in a little different way. First, with a ton of love. She gave me what I needed to keep coming back. So essentially, it was like what I needed. If she gave it to me the first time, I never would have went back.
You're doing therapy sessions with her.
Yeah, absolutely. And she broke me. She did, you know, like in a very loving way. She did what I needed to have done, you know.
Right.
I went to her beaten, which is why the first time I was able to surrender so easily. It was kind of shocking to me. My first 3 ceremonies, the shaman who served me, the guy who ran Rite of Passage, the people who worked there, they were shocked. They were like, we've never seen anybody surrender like that. And I was like, I don't really understand. Like, I don't know. You know, I figured out very quickly that was already
just ready. You were just ready. You knew you were ready.
But I also was afraid of learning lessons the hard way because I've always had to. And so it was like, I feel like Mother Aya knew that, and she gave me that love. She held me through it very beautifully. It was very peaceful. It was what I needed to go back when I got bad again, because that's what kept happening. You know, it was like a few months of being okay, then I would slip back, not to using hard drugs, but taking like kratom or something, you know, just something like that to help. And I'm not against kratom, but.
Right, but you were using a substance to substance with, yes.
Absolutely. That affects the same receptors that I've been stimulating my entire life.
Right.
It wasn't a good thing the way I was using it. I mean, I would spend $200 a day on liquid extract. That's ridiculous, you know what I mean?
Wow, yeah, goodness.
But it was a short time I was using it, and I was able to get myself off without going anywhere, which is the first time I was able to do that. And then I went back to the plant medicines. I went to Peru this time. This was the Christmas. I flew out Christmas of 2019 and was there through New Year's. And that was a beautiful experience. But that was when the lessons got a little harder. That's when I actually figured out what they were saying when they were like, I've never seen anybody surrender like that, because I didn't have to surrender almost. It was just like, bam, here you go.
Right.
In Peru, I was like, oh, here's what's happening. I'm coming up. Like, I didn't do that before. Like, it just kind of threw me into it, you know? So like, you know, the lessons got harder and harder with Mother Aya. And so the 8th ceremony was back in Rite of Passage. And
you were doing all this during COVID time. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, it was kind of crazy.
That may have kept you a little saner than going through COVID, like some people went through COVID then.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I definitely, you know, like that.
Especially if you were struggling with inside, you know? especially if you're struggling with addiction. We know the addiction rate went up during COVID because we didn't have anything else to do but drugs. So mm-hmm. it probably may have saved you more than you even will know just by doing this during that time.
Yeah, that's, absolutely.
That's great. So your eighth ceremony, everything was just getting even harder. Where did we go from there?
So I came back, went to North Carolina, just deep, deep depression, was very wounded, and left North Carolina, moved to another state, and was looking for work, but also looking for treatment. I was thinking about going back to ayahuasca, but I'm like, I can't really do that right now, money-wise, you know?
Right.
And I found a ketamine clinic had just opened up where I just moved. And so I was like, well, I'll try this. You know, honestly, yeah. like I only did ketamine on the street once before, like I tried it at the clinic. And I wasn't that impressed with it because of how people typically use it on the streets. You got to be intentional with it to get those doses, you know?
Right, right. We've talked about that too. Yes. Because I'm not a big ketamine fan. I'm not real big on ketamine, but in the right setting, with the right intentions, would be different. Because my exposure to ketamine has very bad, and so that's always tied to any time that I utilize it. So, like you going to a clinic and going in that direction, I'm open to it because I think that would be an experience that would help change the way I look at ketamine.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hear really good, successful stories or, you know, very positive stories. We have a gal that's on staff that she does she does ketamine treatments, and she has very positive things when she tells me about it, because I think she knows that I'm a little negative when it comes to ketamine, and it's purely because of how I experienced it, and it was in a very bad light. So yeah, I think that's great. So you got a job, you got hired, were you working at that clinic with the ketamine, or were you just utilizing that for your therapy, self-therapy?
So I went there and got the 6 infusions, and I was their third client. They had just opened, and it was just the anesthesiologist and the medical director, and it was just the anesthesiologist present, you know, administering the medicine. Very nice guy. And after my 6 infusions, I called them. I was like, can I come talk to you guys? They're like, yeah, sure, come on up. And I told him, I was like, you know, I'm a therapist and, you know, I have experience in working with therapy, obviously, but in substance use treatment, but I don't want to go back to substance use treatment. I told him,
right.
I said, and I have a lot of experience with psychedelic medicines. I did go through, I worked with an integration specialist, once just on that first journey. I had one preparation and one integration session with her. And it was helpful in a sense, but what I noticed was that there's not really a good theory written on integration for the clinical world. Like, you know, when you go to ceremonies, you have an integration the day after and maybe a phone call later, and that's great, but that's not really integration. You know, it's like, it's just touching on these things and be like, hey, remember that? Yeah, like, good, you're doing all right, see you later.
It's the whole coming between we call it dimension walking, and when you integrate from it's coming through back into your full being. It's like a vibration transfer, and so that would be my biggest concern in a clinical setting, is bedside manner is a thing. We as people like in our community are very heavily always talking about set and setting. So like, that's a thing. I'm coming out of something. What am I waking up into? Who's there? What's the vibe? What's the energy? What is my setting that I'm going to be coming at? You know, is it going to be sterile? Is it going to be, you know, those are the things that I worry about the most. When it comes to the area we're moving towards in the therapies and all those things and the clinicals, is that aspect of utilizing these psychedelic medicines. Because it's one thing to be wherever we go and, you know, wherever, but when you come out of it, that can have such a grand impact on how well you receive whatever it is that you got out of that experience. And that's the thing. Exactly. You know, music, lights, because our senses are so heightened at that point in time. And it's very important, at least to me, that I am ultimately comfortable, or it's gonna flip my switch. And a lot of times the dragon will wake up and then I'm in a really bad place, you know, mentally. So that's the thing. One of the things I worry about, or I think about the most where we are talking about moving into using psychedelics in a clinical and therapeutic setting is Absolutely. To me, in my brain, I hear those things and they're very medical sounding. And mm-hmm. so it's very sterile. It's very mm-hmm. cold. It's all those types of walking into an hospital. You know, I spent 11 days with my kid in the hospital. Like, when I think about those aspects, those are the things that come to mind. And that's not what I want to tie my psychedelic use to. And so I think that's one of the concerns and one of the things that makes my brain kind of not want to even think about the therapy part of it because of those types of things.
Absolutely. I'm really glad you said that too, because it's like, for me, the intention is to bridge that gap, because mm-hmm. I've worked the clinic I worked at. So, because I was the third client, and mm-hmm. so they hired me right away, and I was able to kind of develop and build that program with them, for them, essentially, because they didn't have any knowledge of set and setting. And, you know, like the person who was administering the medicine had very good bedside manners. He had done ketamine himself for his own healing. But he wasn't trained in trauma-informed care or anything of that nature, you know, or how to create a setting and all that. And but we did a good job together doing that. And what was really interesting to touch on what you're speaking to is, you know, several other places started offering ketamine. And all of a sudden, we'd get people coming in from local businesses traumatized, literally. And they would tell me, like, what they would do, how they would set them up. And I'm like, that is insane. They would put people in a room with all the lights on, maybe six people in there, each of them just sitting on their phones. There's a TV on there, and they just give them ketamine and don't even tell them you're supposed to go inside. You're supposed to block out, like, light. You're supposed to, you know, have harmonized music. There's so many things that are important to that journey. Mm-hmm. That, like, literally two clinics closed down and sent all their clients to our clinic because they were wounding people and they knew it, you know. And these weren't clinics that closed completely. They were clinics that were doing other things and started the ketamine portion of the program, you know.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And so they just kind of closed down the ketamine portion and referred to us. And that worked. It worked really well. So much so that even the owner of one of those clinics came in to get treatment by me and tried to get me to go work for him. I was like, well, no, I can't, you know, I don't want to do that.
Right.
Because I'm a person with a lot of, for me, like, aligning with values and ethics is very important. Like, yes. Like, if I start doing things that aren't congruent with my values, I'm not in a good place, you know, and I want to use substances again. It's like, as soon as I feel that inner value conflict, I just feel so much shame.
Right.
So we developed this program, and I'd been there for about 3 years, October, that I would have been there, but I ended up leaving there because, it wasn't a sustainable business the way it was being run, basically.
Yep.
And there were promises made because really, like, I wanted to work with the medicine. I didn't care how money I made.
Right.
Your paycheck, because working academy made five times the amount in a few years, you know. Yep. But I was going through licensure and all the third. So during that time, I kind of I went through a program to become. It was a 10-month training psychedelic assisted therapy for provider. So I got certified to work with ketamine, MDMA, and psilocybin through this. By ketamine, obviously, being the only legal one at the time.
Right.
And then I did the MAPS training for, MDMA specifically. And then I also went and did, I went to the Netherlands and did a training for psilocybin assisted psychotherapy. So I had one covering all three, and then I've done the other two, and I'm going back to the Netherlands this year for an advanced level two training, which will be amazing.
What does that consist of?
So it consists of doing essentially, you can choose and combine two of the three medicines available, ketamine, MDMA, or psilocybin. Mm-hmm. So I'll be doing, I haven't decided yet, ketamine and psilocybin, MDMA or psilocybin. I've experienced them both, you know. So
right.
For me, ketamine and psilocybin is actually almost one of my favorite ways to journey, because it's very interesting how you could take a good dose of psilocybin, because I tend to take big doses, and do just enough ketamine to bring it inside. And it's totally like a DMT world. It's like totally like being fully immersed in DMT journey for a long time. Probably the closest thing I've done to doing ayahuasca. Just the intensity and length of it, it's quite beautiful. So I'll probably end up doing that, but I really love the experiential trainings, because those experiential trainings are really aiming to, like you were talking about, have the right setting.
Right.
Ideally, soon you can kind of do it now, but I, opening a retreat is going to be where it's at. Building a place to house ceremonies, essentially.
Yes.
Is my ideal moving forward, because it's like, I don't want to work for anybody.
Right. No, absolutely. And this is the avenue you want to work in. This is what you're passionate about. This is your passion. So absolutely. How do you achieve to be able to do your passion all the time and it be rewarding and fulfilling is to do exactly like you said, move towards that next move, open a retreat, do it the way that you, the way you would see it, the way you would want it, the way that you know would actually work, that these other things are missing. Make it that component where people want to be at and want to be a part of this and have you be a part of it, because you understand. That's one other thing. I can't wrap my brain around going somewhere and having a therapy type session with psychedelics with somebody who I don't even know if has ever even experienced psychedelics. Like, those are the things, like, you know, how you see the advertisements for come and be, come and learn and, teach you about anything in the psychedelic world. They're teaching and having all these people. Well, are these people, is one of the things experience? Like, do they have to have had the experience to be able to work with these medicines with other people? Like, is that a thing?
It's interesting. The program I went through to become a certified psychedelic assisted therapy provider, you had to do the ketamine. You could get the certificate of completion, but you can't be a certified provider without the experience. That being said, the experience was kind of a joke. They put like a limit on it of such a small dose. I mean, for some people that might work, but for me, it didn't even come close to what I typically would do to reach the third or fourth stage of that journey, which is the most important, like back in the day, talk about don't do too much, you go into the K-hole. It's like, that's where we want you to go. You want to go to the K-hole, because, I mean, the data shows that it's the highest reduction of symptoms,
Right.
And I forgot what the question was that got me started on that line. I thought again.
I don't know if we actually had a question. We were just, I remember. I was, I asked about, you know, when you get into these avenues with the education and getting into these, do you have to have experience? I'm kind of old. I'm kind of old and wiser up there. And I've done lots of substances, like lots. And so like for me, the whole idea to go to see somebody in a therapy setting, I don't do that anyways, but you know, that whole idea. And it's like, if do I have more experience than this person that is actually administrating this to most me? Like I think about that. That's a thing.
And not, you know, only with the medicine, but like with life, it's like, oof. I'll tell you, they're not, when you say you're not into the therapy thing, I get it. Like, because I think that's why I became a therapist, because of my whole life, I was being sent to. Actually, none of them ever helped me. None of them actually gave me therapy.
Like, right. Oh, yeah.
I can see. Like, what the hell was going on with my son? But they were supposed to be the ones who could. So I was like, well, I guess I'm gonna have to go to school and figure it out myself.
You went and educated yourself with the material that a therapist, if you went to them, would already have had, and therefore can diagnose you because they have that knowledge. You just skipped all that. You went and got the knowledge. You got the accreditation, you got the degree, because you did it for yourself. And I totally get that. I don't discredit therapy. I think therapy is good for, there's a place and time for everything. And therapy is one of those things. It just has not been something that I've needed in my life. I've always been more of the person people use as a therapist, you know, involuntary and involuntarily at times. So I've learned a lot through just helping other people in their strife. Should I have seen that therapist at any point in time in my life? Maybe, you know, maybe when I was getting clean off of methamphetamines and went through a whole psychosis split, you know, there was no therapy happening with any doctors. I was, you know, it was me and my parents, and God bless my parents' soul. They just had no idea how to deal with a person who was an addict and it was trying to get clean on her own. So yeah, there's maybe there are times in my life I should have. I just learned of something about my youngest and how she was feeling at one point in time during growing up. And, you know, maybe I should have been more aware, maybe had her talking to a therapist, you know, things like that. I think, yes, there was a time and place, and sometimes I maybe should have, but I didn't. And at this point in time, at my age, and just having and understanding people, like having conversations with you, knowing that I have access to therapists and therapy is comforting, and also I know is there if I'm ever in need. But at this point in time, yeah, therapy is just kind of one of those things that kind of I don't know about, because I'm just not in that setting. But you are, and this is what I like talking to you, because you do utilize it. And I think, like we said, you went and got educated for yourself to be a therapist, and now we want to. So where you're at, are you making the motions for this retreat that you're wanting, this wellness center you're wanting to set up? Like, what is that idea? Where is that? Now, I know you went to, we'll get to that, but let's go back to this. I know you went to Colorado and you went to the MAPS convention.
Yes.
Let's talk about this first, and then we'll talk about future idea of what you want to do with this this retreat thing that we were talking about. But let's talk about MAPS, because you're one of the only people I know who went. And so I'd like to hear about this, and I think people in the community would too. So you went to MAPS. Let's start me on your journey.
Absolutely. So that was what a beautiful experience it was, for many reasons, you know, because there are a lot of people in the field that are amazing people, have good intentions. And I've got to meet a lot of those people. You know, so I have some job offers pending, which is awesome. And that's been going on, but, the convention itself was amazing. I mean, I've never seen anywhere, and or could imagine seeing anywhere in our country, so set up and designed for people to go and experience whatever they want to experience. It was actually quite beautiful. It just so happens, right, while I was going there, I had just started working for a new company, and I won't name that company because of non-disclosure agreements and things of that nature. But they're a very large company. And when they called and found me and recruited me and asked me to work for them, and I kind of told them, you know, the only reason I would come work for you is because I'm terrified you're going to fuck it up. I said that within a minute.
I feel that. I feel that 100%.
And when I said that, he said, well, that's why we want to hire you. He said, we'll let you structure things. We need somebody who knows what they're doing to come in and structure it so we're delivering good services. So I was like, great. If you'll let me do that, I'll take the job. But I'll walk the second I see otherwise. I told them, you know. And so I was only there for a couple of weeks and then left for the convention, the Psychedelic Science Convention. Mm-hmm. So I was there after seeing what this place looked like a little bit. And then going to the convention, got to find out a lot more about it. And it was devastating what I saw, honestly, because of the amount of, you know, the percentage of clinics that this company is responsible for that we don't even know because they're under so many umbrellas, you couldn't really connect it, you know? Right. And the way that they're delivering services or not actually was just terrible. Mm-hmm. So I was really kind of in a mixed emotional state at the beginning of the convention. So I was really upset about the job I was at the time and seeing what it looked like there. Not that they were present, but essentially they were by some third party who was salesmen. People that you could tell were reading from a script, and if you ask them a question, they didn't have an answer if it wasn't on their script. You know what I mean? I was like, what the hell is this? So I was really kind of disturbed by that. And this was Wednesday, which was the first day the exhibition hall was open. So it was really cool. I took a walk around the exhibition hall and found some ayahuasca extract, just the ayahuasca, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it could take, you know, 40 minutes before. And then there's booths giving away all kinds of stuff and, you know, mushrooms, mm-hmm. DMT cards. And so I got a cart and I took some ayahuasca and I went out in the front yard of the convention where there was thousands of people. And you can kind of tell it was like they were laying there doing their own thing, their ceremony. You know, people were doing all kinds of stuff. So I was like, oh, seems like a good spot. I laid down and kind of blasted off, you know. And it was a really interesting story just to share because right before I was about to take my last hit, some random young girl came running up and she was like overheated, very tired, asking me if she could sit down and take a break. And I was trying to communicate, but I couldn't. So I was trying to answer to her. And then she saw the pen and she's like, oh, is that a pen? You know, I'm like, yes. And so I took one last hit and just handed it to her and was gone. And I was out for about 30 minutes because I had the MAOI in me. So it kind of helped.
Right. You were just on a journey. Yeah.
What was really cool is when I came out, waiting for me, like, this girl was 19, had no experience with psychedelics, like, really. She told me this later. She just like organically knew to hold space and how to hold it, which was beautiful. Right. Like, that gives me hope. You know, it really does. But then she right away wanted to ask me how it was, and I couldn't even talk, but she saw that and she goes, that's okay, I'll just sing you a song. And she sung a song that she made up on the spot about meeting me, about, and it wasn't the medicine I was on. It's, she had a beautiful voice. It sounded like you would imagine Snow White singing in Disney. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it was like all about our encounter. And then like, as soon as she stopped singing, she gave me a hug and was like, I'll see you later.
Oh, nice.
It's off. And I did see her again. We ran into each other, but it was like such a moment because my intention when I lay down there to do that was to connect to the energy of what was happening there. Because the energy I was feeling was coming from the wounding of, like we talked about, trying to bring psychedelic medicines into the clinical world. Right. And I have a lot of fear about that. So I really feel like corporations will ruin it.
Yes.
You know?
I feel the same way.
Yeah. And so
I think there's a majority of our community that feels like that, to be honest.
Absolutely.
I think that's also why we all sit in this community, because we all feel like that. A lot of us are not a part of what is happening in the MAPS world. There's a lot of us that don't even know. There's a lot of us that do know, but I think a lot of us that reside in DMT world are kind of more of like-minded of us as, you know, they're going to mess this up. The intention of it is bad. You know, we're going to be the ones that are going to suffer from some of these regulations, these regulations that are going to get put on some of this stuff that's out there. And it's, we're going to be the ones most affected by it. So I think I agree. Like I feel we're the middleman in all of this. That's why you going to this convention just excites me, because you're the middleman. So like, you got to see, and you got to experience like some of these things that, you know, we can only think about. Okay. So she sang to you, then she hugged you and she went off. You did see her a couple times, but didn't speak. So at this point in time, what was going on at the convention? Like, where were you at that point in time?
So at that point in time, I was right in the front yard of it in a nice grassy area. I came out, she left. And like, what was very interesting is like right when she walked away and I was just gaining back my ability to talk. Mm-hmm. Somebody came up to interview me, which was people interviewing for MAPS.
Nice.
So I came out of the journey right into an interview.
Oh, that's the interview you're trying to get sent to me. Yeah. I love this. Okay. So how did that interview go, actually?
It went really well, you know. Like, it was so funny because afterwards I was happy that they offered to share the clip with me. You know, I had to sign a waiver so they could use it. And, you know, they did hundreds of them, so who knows if it'll get used. Are part of it. But they sent me the three clips that they had. So it's probably like a 7-minute interview, something like that.
Nice.
It was funny afterwards when he sent it to me. I couldn't remember what he asked me. I couldn't remember anything I said. But as soon as I started playing it, I heard the question and I paused it and I knew in my mind how I would respond. And I listened to it. I was like, oh man, perfect. It went okay.
How funny.
And we touched on a lot of the things we're talking about. They really had, one of the biggest questions they asked me is, you know, how do you feel about, you know, the psychedelic community and what's occurring with the industry right now? And really, I just spoke to the idea of I'm terrified because, you know, because through my lens, it's like the big companies running a lot of the clinics, they are the wounders. They are the oppressors. They're the same ones causing the people to be sick. And it's like, you can't fix a problem from the same framework that you're creating it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, it's like, that kills me because it's like, and that's why there are some changes happening on a national level, which a lot of companies may or may not know about, but fortunately, they're putting things into place where you have to have certain people on staff. have to have a psychiatrist. You have to have an anesthesiologist to deliver it, and you have to have somebody certified in psychedelic therapies. because it's such a specific modality of working. Like, it's essentially not therapy. It is, because it's it's a therapeutic process.
Right.
But for me, like, therapy, I finally found a therapist just recently.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm like, oh my God, this is therapy. I think I finally got it in my life. I tried it a bunch. I never had it delivered. And it's been really amazing working with this person, because it really, like, it shows me how much therapy itself is part of the problem. It's like,
yeah,
that I want to surrender my license because of it. And I might. And because I see I define a therapist as a couple different things. But therapy is really just two humans sitting in a room, remembering what it means to be human together.
Right.
At its core. And it's like, it should be through the Socratic method mainly. Like, when I work with clients, I'm just asking questions, you know?
Right.
I'm hearing their story. I'm seeing the dots connected that they're sharing. And I ask questions to get them there. And
right. And you just give them a different perspective, a different point of view. It's like watching a movie and you're being able to talk it back out loud so they can see it from a different area.
Absolutely. And
because we only see it from us, we don't always get to see it from the other side. And so the importance of being able to see it on the other side is something for people that they need. You're right.
Yeah, it's tremendous, you know. And but to speak to that too, like when you said, maybe I should have gone to therapy.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't.
Right.
Good statements, there's distorted thoughts, actually. They're just, it's like our mind almost like, should it, hindsight's always 20/20, right?
Yes.
And it's like, but look, in hindsight, you got through what you got through. And
yes.
You made it, and you're doing good in life, you know, like you seem to be happy and at least fulfilled to some extent, I'm guessing, you know. We all have pain still, right? But like, you move through your shit without having to.
Right. I've learned.
You would have been rewounded and stuck.
Right. I picked up the skills and learned the skills, and I can keep applying those skills that I've picked up during all the trauma throughout whatever I've been through. Yes, absolutely. Because that's just kind of how I am, though. It's kind of especially when I start having kids, like, it's, you just kind of. You just deal with it. You look at it, you learn how to analyze it, you understand it. This is what psychedelics had helped me to do after I got clean off of methamphetamines and having to come back into the world as not what I was. Psychedelics is what helped me to just reintegrate back into who KB was, because like I said, I experienced a psychosis split during getting clean. And I can remember a point, my dad coming in and I just lost it. I was out of control. My dad comes in and grabs me, and they just didn't know how to deal with a addict that was going, was trying to get clean. And, I just remember him saying, I just hope you're not really, I hope you're not crazy. I hope it's really the drugs. I hope you have not damaged yourself mentally to where you've gone crazy. Like, that was his a fear. So like, going through all that, and we just did it. I stayed away from all the dealers. I cut myself completely off. Like, I had a kid. I had two kids. I had children. Two kids I have to make sure and take care of, and it was I got through it. So now I got through that. I can get through anything. That's kind of the mentality I put. And I'm notorious for putting myself in situations I shouldn't have. Like, I make decisions on the fly at times, and sometimes they're not the best, but once I go through it, I've gone through it. And it's like, you just pick up those life skills and those tools to now I can deal with some other things. It also helps me relate to people easier. It helps me understand when I'm reading things on the site, or I'm reading things in our Discord, and just how what people are talking about, it makes me understand more. And I enjoy the community because I can relate to them. I don't know if they ever, I hope they relate to, can relate to me, but I relate to every person that I have gotten to be a part of in this community, because it's like, I see myself in every single one of these people in some way. And that I think is important, especially for the psychedelic community, because a lot of us just don't feel like we have anybody around us. We're like, so many people I talk to are like, I don't have anybody in my community that does this. And so that's one importance of why the our side is so good for some of us, because we are so isolated. And so I don't even know where I started going off on that, but anyways.
Oh, yeah, I love it, man. That's your medicine, your pain.
I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot being a part in running DMT world. I've learned how to objectively look at things and be okay with every other person's way that they see things, talk about things, believe things. In the beginning, you know, there were things that would make me flare up, and really I feel the DMT makes me feel. People make me feel, make me understand how I feel about things. Make me understand why, you know, certain subjects or things flare me up. And so I'm able to look at them. And it is my medicine, because, and it, I don't know, the community, I feel like I know every single one of these people, and I've never physically met most of them. So, I mean, it's just fascinating. Yeah. And now getting to sit and talk to people on the podcast like this, and it just makes us feel like we'll be like, these people, how many of these people really know who you are? Like, nobody had a clue, but now they're going to know just a little bit more about you and like what you're interested in and what you're doing. And now when you post stuff, they're going to be like, oh, hey, dude, that's that dude. That is important. This is how it makes us all feel like we're not just a digital piece in this community. This makes us real. This is something that is bringing us even closer as people in our community. That's one reason KB's Care, man. So next, I don't know if you know, but have you seen me talk about this? Let me give you this little tidbit real fast. Yeah. So in 10 days, my camera person and I are going to jump on the Amtrak, and we're going to make a trip up to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Nice. Because there is a festival, an Ethiel Fest, which is all about plant medicines. And it's a festival, and they're going to have speakers, and they're going to have some exhibits, and just there's, you name it, since psychedelics are legalized up there, and cannabis and everything, these are the people that are going to be on the University of Michigan, and they're going to be talking about the importance of therapies with the plant medicines, and, you know, all the different advocating we've been doing for these, because this is what, their third year, I think, maybe it's their second year. So we're going to take this trip, and I have started, this will be my first episode of recording KB's Caravan, and we're going to take a video, and we're going to video the whole experience while we're there. And then we're going to upload that, so everybody gets to see what we got to experience at this festival. So that's what we're doing.
When is it? When's the festival? Is the date?
It is, let me pull this up. Karen. I think it says the Sunday. My little computer. Mm-hmm. Bark for me. Where did it go? There it is. Okay. Open. Okay. So we leave the 14th. It is Sunday the 17th at 1:11 at the University of Michigan.
Wow. That's September, right?
Yes. 14 days. We're leaving in 14 days. It's actually in 2 weeks.
Would you mind sending me that link to that?
Oh, absolutely.
I might see if I can go.
Sweet. That's cool. Yeah. Yes, that's what we are going to go and venture. I'm going to meet up with one of our staff members and his wife. And he's the one that was like, hey, do you think you can make this? This is what this is. And this was a while ago. And I'm like, well, this is cool. Because this is also one of the reasons I want to go to this is because this is these are the therapists. These are the people who've been advocating. These are the people that are helping get this put on, opening up our mainstream to understanding the importance of the mushrooms and the cannabis. And so this is why I want to go, because these are the people that I feel will be able to give me more information about stuff I don't know. I don't understand. I live in Kansas. So Kansas is going to be the last person that ever gets psychedelics decriminalized, never probably legalized. We can't even get cannabis going. I mean, not even medical. Like, we just got hemp and CBD stuff passed like 2 years ago. And then they did this silly thing where they accidentally dropped the percentage that can be in the cannabis, the hemp plant, because it used to be like 2%. And then something happened, some stupid thing happened, and it dropped down to 1%, which is nearly impossible to grow a hemp plant that has 1% THC in it. So all the farmers that were out here couldn't use their crop that year because the percentile, they couldn't meet the percentile, was over. And so, like, this is what's going on in Kansas. We have old thinking heads in our government. They don't see a reason. They don't see a point. There's nothing that can be presented to them at this point in time for them to even look at the benefits of what even medical marijuana can do, which is asinine to me. We are in Kansas. We have Oklahoma has got medical legal. We got Colorado, who is full legal. You've got Missouri, who is now full legal. I mean, we are sitting in the middle of, I don't know what they're thinking. Like, it's an hour. I can go an hour away and I can go into a dispensary, get whatever I want and come home. Like, why? But they're more concerned about me coming back over that county line, that county line with marijuana and trying to stop that. I just don't understand. But anyways, yeah, I live in Kansas. So sometimes I get on my soapbox and just kind of go off. But anyways, yes, I will send this link over to you.
But to speak to what you're saying, though, like, it drives me insane, too, because for me, like, values are very important. And for me, I think one of my number one values, I have a lot of number one values, but it's fluidity over rigidity. It's like rigidity in any system is always toxic. Almost across. You know, it's like people have to stay open to evidence, things changing, seeing that, like, you know, objective measurement tools only get you so far, and when as we advance with those, we're going to need evidence that will show us other things.
Right. Exactly.
So it's crazy that they but at the same time, when you know about the, you know, part of, you know, being a master's in social work, part of the component is the macro level and going through and looking at the legislative sessions and what it takes. It's insane. It really is. It's like, we think we live in a democracy. We don't. We live in a world where it's like we have the delusion of opportunity to have somebody speak their voice and have like something happen. But the reality is, take 7 years to even get close to getting a bill initially passed. And that's just the first step of getting it implemented. It's like, it's just crazy.
But that's right.
If it passed, if a Republican's passing it, Democrats are running it and running it into the ground because they didn't want it. And it's like, it's so crazy.
Politics. It is crazy. It's maddening. It's maddening. That's why I just do whatever I do and not worry much about it. At least try not to. That's why I go to places like Michigan and go and see what they're doing, because you never know. So, okay, let's talk. So your future plans that you're setting your sights on is what exactly?
So interestingly enough, I had a really good opportunity come up for me. By sticking to my values, essentially, somebody saw that and really appreciated it. somebody who has good values. And so I am an owner now of a clinic in the making, where I'll have full control and ability to create the setting exactly how it needs to be, to run it how it needs to be run, in a sense, to run it congruent with doing psychedelic medicine and not psychedelic therapy. I mean, right. It is considered therapy, but like, I'll tell you, I've heard other people that haven't done psychedelics and haven't done any training in it and are therapists, and talk about working with ketamine, and the things they tell me make me sick.
Right.
I'm like, that's disgusting. Like, first of all, like, you don't guide anybody. You right. know, like, we call them guides, whatever. Like, if you're guiding somebody, that's fucked up. You know, especially right. if you're guiding somebody you don't even know, and you might have met for one session before, maybe. You know, yeah. I've heard of people actually going through 5 of their 6 infusions without ever meeting a therapist. And then a therapist coming in who doesn't know them, never talked to them, and doing therapy while they're in ketamine. I'm like, are you kidding me? Do you even know what that means? Like, what do you do? Oh, we guide them, blah, blah. I'm like, no. You don't. Like,
yeah, just that makes me that just listening to you talk about that makes me terribly uncomfortable. Like, right? Even to think about that, that makes me terribly uncomfortable.
It's like MK Ultra or some shit, you know, like playing out at the clinical level. Like, right. Oh, we're gonna do it in the clinic. I'm like, what the hell? It's terrible. And so, like, for me, like, the thing I like about the idea of bringing it into the clinical world is because, unfortunately, our clinical world in the U.S. is so sick. It really is. It's made to keep it sick. That's why I think, as a therapist, like, I feel like I play a functional part in a dysfunctional system in an attempt to keep it functioning, and it's dysfunctional. And I won't do that with clients. I tell them, like, I'm not going to sit here and deal with symptom control if you get to work. I'm going to do some healing. Let's look at it. Like, actually look at it. And all I do is ask questions. Follow them. You know what I mean? It's like, it's all about following somebody and letting them, so they can follow their own inner healing intelligence, like we talked about the medicine connecting it to, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we know what we need to heal if we could get rid of the conditioning of our mind.
Yeah.
And that's where ketamine has a great place in the process. It's like, it is definitely my least out of any psychedelic to use, mainly, but for certain place in a protocol of treatment, it's like a great medicine.
Right.
Because essentially, like, if we took it, you know, imagine all of them, really, you only have somebody coming in with high PTSD, dissociative.
I was going to say, this is why PTSD, I believe it is very good for that, because of the disassociation factor of what it does, and anything that's in that spectrum. I totally understand, just by using ketamine, how that can be so beneficial.
And then, like, it'd be cool, like, get them through that, then you bring them to psilocybin, deep in the work, and then you bring, you know, it's like, there's like a place for each medicine in a process, you know?
Right. Well, I believe that. I believe that you can utilize, I believe that.
Yeah. And so I love it that, you know, I do love it that we're starting down the path. I'm also just terrified, like we've talked about, but I do have hopes, in a sense that, you know, I have to try to keep a growth oriented perspective for my own well being.
Right.
And also for the collective, because I think, you know, collectively, we need these medicines back in our lives, because, you know, technological growth has far surpassed their spiritual and emotional growth. And if we don't catch up spiritually and emotionally, we're fucked.
I agree. What are your thoughts on people who are hyper motivated on the psychedelic use, that it is, you know, it is the answer, it is the cure, it is the thing that's going to make everything better. What are your thoughts on people who think like that?
So I would say to anybody like that, and I believe this to be true, mm-hmm. psychedelics, they're not healing medicines. What they do is they highlight what's there and they pull it out. And so they can make you Hitler or Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
I do believe that. I mean, if you look through history, they have been useful.
Right.
Because it's all about like looking at what's inside and seeing what's inside and aligning with what's inside. And let's be honest, as humans, like, we've had to fight for everything, devour to survive. It's always been like that. You know what I mean? And so, like, you know, I don't doubt if Hitler was doing, like, you know, Sarian Rue and the Akasha as their own ceremonial brew.
Right.
That's how he became who he was. I'm not saying that's the truth, but, like, psychedelics aren't the cure to go all. I don't believe in cures, first of all. I think the one thing we have to acknowledge is our shadow. Shadow work, to me, is the most important thing. It's like you have to acknowledge Hitler exists within all of us.
Right.
Because he does. You know, we all have that potential to unfold according to life's like for us. And so I think people, that's the kind of, the people that will say stuff like that, go, it's straw, it's going to save everything. Like the idea that that's the American way. That's how, like, we get these good, you know, you can see these trends throughout the last 30, 40 years, like diet trends, for example. They'll have a lot of good components to them, but they're sold in a way that it's a cure-all. It'll fix anything. People dive into it, and then they don't really pay attention to anything else but that diet.
Right.
It falls apart, and so they throw the whole system out. Like, it doesn't work, but it's like part of that system works.
Right.
Like, so for that mentality, for me, it's like, I do understand how people can feel that way and want to feel that way.
Yeah.
But it's dangerous to feel that way because
this is part of my fear with where we're moving with the psychedelics. I don't want them to be promoted in that light. I don't want it to be, and you're already seeing it in the mainstream. You're already seeing the glimmer and the glitz and the, oh, this is, maybe you need to do, this can help you with. I mean, we see it with pharmaceuticals all the time. I don't want that to happen in with the psychedelics. Cause it's like, it cheapens the whole thing. Like, I don't know. It's like taking the divine, the sacred divine out of what the psychedelic medicines can actually do, like they're what they're doing. And it's, maybe that's more just me personally. That's just, and I understand that's my opinion and that's how I feel, but that's kind of, you know, that is a lot of hesitance I have towards trying to look positive towards this movement into these bigger aspects with psychedelics, you know, when they're already talking about creating different types of psychedelics, like, What does that mean? Like, why are we doing this? Didn't we do this with research chemicals? Isn't like why? I mean, didn't we go down this road? Now all of a sudden, because it's legal, and like all of a sudden because it's now accepted, that now we're going to start creating a whole new line of different types of psychedelics, or we're going to do these weird things like take the trip out of a mushroom trip.
Oh my God, I can't stand that.
What does that mean to you?
They like didn't that? Put that with LSD, they're getting ready to release LSD. They say LSD without hallucinogenic effects. I hate that word. Get them with attention, but that's how
right.
It reads.
Like what?
Well, what are you doing? Just doing that? You're trying to increase what? 5-HT2A serotonin output? Like what the fuck? What is that going to do? Like,
this is not why I want to take LSD. This is not why I want to do shrooms. Like, I need the trip. The trip is my, here we go. The trip is the therapy that helps my medicine work.
It's the best therapy there is because that's, it's your right. own therapy. You could analyze your own thoughts. You learn how to look at the world and be like, fuck, everything I know is conditioned and isn't true. I mean, there's some truth out there. Don't get me wrong, but like, subjective beliefs, they're just pushed on us, and we're supposed to believe that we're supposed to live this way.
Right, so why in their mind, taking that away out is going to, like, I don't understand, like, I don't understand why we're breaking down the component. We did this with the cannabis plant. We completely dissected the whole entire plant to where we don't even use the whole entire plant anymore. Like, we just use the isolated components of it. Like, why are we doing this with psychedelics now? I don't know. Those are the things that, like, make me kind of crazy. Maybe I'm a little protective. Maybe I'm a little, I don't know, but, like, that makes no sense to me. Like, give me how it was. Don't ruin this. And it is. I feel they're going to ruin it.
Yeah. Yeah. And what scares me is, like, just that, like, what is their intention with it? Because, because I don't know if we talked about it before, but, you know, oil, since it's come around, has been the number one selling commodity on the planet, right?
Yes.
Since it's been discovered and used in the Industrial Revolution, every dollar is based off currency of oil. You know? Like, it has been.
Right.
For the first time in human history, something has surpassed that. And that is information, your information, my information, right? So, like, how come? How come that information is worth so much money? What are they doing with it? And that scares me, because it's like, that's why I try to stay away from the internet. I don't watch the news. I don't watch TV. I don't listen to the radio. I have my own music, and that's it.
Good for you. You keep on that.
Yeah, because I don't like the diet of America. It's sick, you know? But it scares me, because at the same time, I'm like, wait, why do I feel this way?
Yeah.
Because, like, my information is out there. They have it. Like, did they make me this way? And I don't even know. Because, like, what? I mean, what would make my information or anybody's information more valuable than oil is the ability to make them do whatever they want you to do.
Honestly. That's right. That's exactly right. We are programmed. We are controlled, and the things that you are taking out of your life are, you are a little bit less controlled than the rest of us are. You're exactly right. You are 100%.
I hope so. But I also have a fear that they want me to do that for some reason. Why? I don't know. Like, maybe it was programmed. It's just a weird thing. I can't wrap my head around completely.
No, I get it. No, I totally get it. That makes, yeah. No. Yeah,
strange stuff. And,
right, like,
it's a scary world, you know.
Right, I don't know. Do you think the utilizations of psychedelics in the wrong hands of people could cause things like I don't know, like MK Ultra type things in definitely. Our modern world?
Yeah, 100%. It's like, definitely, which is what scares me. You know, it's like, maybe they're putting it out there now because they're doing that.
Because we need to desensitize the normal person into being okay with when it actually gets here. Yeah, we see that a lot.
You know what? I have this other theory. It's not like a theory. It's just a thought. But I sit with it a lot because it's strange to me, because I've experienced it in ways that are like, oh, fuck, is this really what's happening? You know, I feel, I don't know how you feel exactly about it, but I'm guessing similar to me, like, DMT is the spirit molecule. It's a transitional molecule to transition us from the disembodied to the embodied.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. And I have a fear that ketamine is now being used because it's going to be what is used to transition us into the computer chip.
Exactly, because you know what it does? Because of the disassociation, it cuts you off from the grounding of the earth. It cuts you off from the grounding to the spirit. It cuts you off, and it leaves you in that dead space. And the longer we sit in that dead space, the less we are connected, the less we need to be connected, the need to be connected. And then therefore we are able to be put wherever we want to be put. I wholeheartedly agree with you. And that's just, I've thought that for a long time. That's not why I don't like ketamine at all, because I understand the uses of it. We can use it as a tool. But I do believe there is going to be intentions that are going to be applied to this. And possibly one of may be a key factor in why ketamine is being used in certain fashions with certain people, because of that exact thing. As fast as we're moving in our technological world, and as fast as we're seeing as the psychedelics are being all those regulations, all that red tape is being lifted just as rapidly. Oh, there's definitely a parallel. I mean, people may call me crazy because I think that, and that's perfectly fine because these are thoughts that I've had
for sure
for quite some time.
People are crazy not to think that. You know, it's like, how can you not?
Look at all the stuff. Okay, just with AI alone, when it jump started and we had Midjourney. Okay, Midjourney is an AI program where you go put prompts in and it pulls the pictures. Okay. So all of a sudden we have all these different AI programs. And next thing I see all these promotions of people are, and I've done it myself. I took somebody's trip and I put it in prompts and it made this picture and it was pretty cool. And then all of a sudden, this is what you're seeing. Or you're seeing all this digital AI artwork of psychedelics. Now I told somebody one time, I said, you know, the comforting part I have to all this is that a computer will never be able to actually have a psychedelic trip. It will never be able to have a psychedelic trip like we can. That's the one thing that will separate me from a computer. But you see all the digital, the music and the stuff, and you're seeing all the AI things. And so now we're being programmed into thinking that this is all what the trips are. These are what the trips look like. You see it all the time. I hear conversations all the time. Oh, I see the Aztec stuff, or I see this stuff, or I see an octopus, or does everybody see these things? Do we all see the same stuff? Are we seeing the same stuff? Well, we're seeing the same stuff because we're talking about it. And we're talking about it, so it's imprinting. It's imprinting in our brains. Therefore, when we go into our trips, we're seeing the same things that we've been sitting here reading on trips reports. They're doing the same thing with AI, and they're creating this psychedelic world, this visual world to these things. And so, therefore, this is now creating into our brains as the psychedelic communities, you know, all this, we're using it, we're doing these therapies, like what is happening? These are what I think about. You know, it could be complete bullshit, but these are things that I think about. Yes.
Well, you're right too, because it's like it's so interesting. People will come in and, you know, I did want to mention something, this ties back to, I forgot about, you know, like they talk about the Michael Pollan effect, right? Like his book, when it came out, it spread a lot of, psychedelics began to grow a lot in the media and get more attention because of that book, right? Well, I was working in ketamine after that book came out, and people would come in having read the book. I've read it. It's not a great book, but like it's got information. People come in and they had a better understanding and less expectations of healing, right? It was like they had like a better mindset about it coming in. And so I was there for about maybe a year and a half when the Netflix documentary came out.
Yeah.
And I didn't watch it. It came out like a Thursday. And I was like, all right, I wonder how this is going to affect things, right? Well, the next Tuesday, because we were only open 3 days a week, the next Tuesday we were open, I had 11 consultations that day, which is more than they would typically do in a month. Like, honestly. And
that's a lot of energy. That's a lot of energy transfer. That's a lot.
Absolutely. Especially when every one of them came in thinking it was a magic bullet. Yeah. And I eventually told each one of them, like, look, ketamine will not heal you. It's not going to take your pain away. What it will do, like, especially, like, you know, people come in, they'll start, that day specifically, several people came in who were in very abusive relationships.
Right.
They had no plans on leaving them. They loved their partner. They were just like unhappy with them. I mean, I could tell there was abuse that they weren't sharing yet, you know, and I could see it. It's so obvious. And it came out in the wash, but I told them, I was like, you know, I'm hearing what you saw in that documentary, but the truth is ketamine will give that to you. What it will do is show you where your things in life aren't right. Right. And if you don't fix them, it typically makes it worse. And that's the truth. It's like when people go in for ketamine treatment, I think all psychedelics, really what they do is they highlight our inner value conflicts and they make us align with them or not. And if we don't align with them, we have more of awareness of what they are. It hurts a lot more when we keep going. That's been my experience with them. For sure. And I believe I even know about marijuana. Like, there are times in my life, I know if I get anxious from smoking marijuana, I'm doing something against my values and I have to sit.
Oh, for sure.
You know, for sure. And so it was interesting, like, every client came through there. Luckily enough, most of them did the work. One person specifically didn't, wouldn't leave her partner, and went home and kept getting beat, you know, and she was back 6 months later after she left him finally, and then got somewhere, you know. So it did help. It was just long. It took a while. took a while for her to gain awareness, go back to it and feel it, because now she had to almost. She couldn't not feel it anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got one more question for you, and then I think we'll wrap this up. So if you, if you could say anything to our community, you've been with us for 4 years. You've been here the long haul. If there's anything you want to say to this community or advice or anything, this is your opportunity to do it. So I'm going to give you the mic and you can just tell this community whatever it is that you feel you need to get out there to them.
I love that. I love that. That might take me a second to put together in my mind. I like to be intentional. Because there's lots I'd love to say to everybody.
Right.
I really appreciate the people in the community. You know, especially the other admins on the site, the people that call people out for sourcing, because it keeps us alive and it keeps us being able to connect and help one another, share our knowledge together, spread it to others, you know, and I love that. I love the community for that reason. And there was moments I think I've shared with you in the past where I would step off for a while and just not be on, because I'd go on and see these things like, this feels like Facebook or something, complaining, but I'd come back and that would get weeded out. And that was a really beautiful thing. And there's so many people specifically on the site that like have impacted my life I've never even met. And I love that. You know, I love having in a community where I feel safe and I think other people feel safe.
Yeah.
One thing I would want to share with people is like, we need people. We need the people on. For me, like, you know, you asked me about the retreat and I kind of went into the other thing about starting a business, but that business is started with the purpose for me to live somewhere else, because I could be licensed here, own it, work remotely.
Yeah.
And then be able to fund building a retreat. Right. And my goal is to, you know, I don't need to make a lot of money. What I want is to live with people and work with people with similar values. And people right. have different things to contribute, you know, like, I'm not a good business person. I'm a great therapist. I'm not great when right. it comes to like, finances, you know, things like that. But there's right. all, you know, I think our community has people that have careers or have passions that can really support. Essentially, I would love to start some type of non-for-profit to like have some kind of advocacy group to stop America from fucking it up.
Absolutely.
Big fear we've been talking about the whole time, you know? And it's funny, I've been writing an article on this for a long time, but I write so many different things that like I have 20 unfinished things. because I tend to write when I'm in flow on a certain topic, and it, you know, that takes a while, but you know, so just to get that out there, it's like, you know, I think people that have similar values like you and I, and people that want to see good with these things and don't just want to use them for fun. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with using them for fun. I do that right. too. I hate the word recreational. It's right. like, yeah. But I think most importantly is like, let's remember what it means to be human and connect. And connect over what we can, what we have in common, and stop talking so much about what's different about ourselves, you know?
Right. Yes.
That's what my hope is with entheogens coming out and more people using them. Maybe more people will wake up to the idea that like, what the fuck are we doing? You know, like, honestly,
I hope so too.
Yeah, and just, you know, through that, and just, you know, a lot of appreciation for everything you've done, and just conversations, ones we've had in the past before getting here, and yep. You know, it's been great getting to know you, and you know, I'd love to see you in Ann Arbor if I get to make it up there. That'd be awesome.
Absolutely, that'd be cool.
Yeah, and yeah, I think I covered.
I think
that.
You covered it all. Well, I'm really glad that we got to sit down and have this conversation. It's been fun. I enjoy doing these. I love getting to get to know people in the community even more. So. If I say that, I'm going to let everybody know. Thanks for tuning in to the Rambling Rabbit, and keep us sending, friends.